Welcome back to Durker and Hot on Baseball, where I'll talk old school baseball with former Astros pitcher, broadcaster, and manager, Larry Durker. Larry, I guess we've got two unfortunate losses to the baseball community in recent days with the passing of Tom Seaver and Lou Brock.
Yes, two of the greats. And beyond all the things they did on the field, both of those guys were ball players. They were just the kind of guy you want in the clubhouse, the kind of guy you might want to go sit in the back of the plane with and talk about something. A person who would carry some weight if you needed to. Talk to a coach or a manager or a GM or something. They were leaders in every way.
Let's talk about Seaver first, since he was a pitcher during your era as well. He's a couple years older than you, but of course he spent some time in the service, went through a longer time in the minors and spent a little time at USC. Were you aware of him as you were a high school player and coming up?
No. I think he grew up in Fresno or somewhere up there in the
right.
in the valley.
Okay.
San Joaquin Valley, I think. And anyway, then he went to USC, but he spent 1 year, I think, pitching in Alaska in the summer league.
Right.
And it was when he came back from Alaska to USC that I think he became a prime property. My guess is that he didn't develop his velocity quite at as early an age as some other young pitchers. And so the first time I saw him was at Shea Stadium, and he pitched a good game and beat us. I struck out a few guys, maybe five or six, but he had it seemed like perfect control. You know, most everything right around the knees, most everything on the corner, and then every once in a while up and on your hands. His curveball wasn't really that wicked, sharp-breaking curveball. It kind of rolled in there, but it kind of rolled in there right at the outside corner of the knees. So I would say that when he came up and won 16 games and was rookie pitcher of the year, maybe rookie of the year, that he wasn't throwing as hard at that juncture as he was later in his career. And I would say maybe 3 years after that was when he could just blow the ball by anybody upstairs. And I think one of the games where he was doing that was in San Diego against the Padres. And I think it was an afternoon game that may have been delayed by rain or something, but he ended up pitching in the twilight, and he struck out the last 10 guys of the game right in a row.
Right. In fact, you had
That's how you protect a short lead. Don't give your fielders any chance to
right.
blow it.
In fact, that does parallel what you were talking about, because I happened to look at that game because you did a baseball library on it, and that was 1970, and he came up in 67. So it follows the idea that you can look at his stats and see where there was a jump in strikeouts and that sort of thing. And if I remember correctly, he said somewhere along the line in there, he went on active duty with the Marines, and he said that helped him mature mentally and physically. So that was apparently an important part of his physical development that led to his success on the mound.
Yeah, I think so. And also, one thing that just occurs to me as we speak is that I pitched a lot of innings when I was 18, 19, 20, 21. And those would have been years for him where he was either at USC or he was in the early part of his professional career. And I don't think he piled up as many innings as a lot of other guys. Nolan, to a certain extent, was the same way. He came out of games a lot of times because he had trouble throwing strikes. But I don't think he piled up quite as many innings at quite an early age as maybe I did, or Steve Carlton or Don Sutton. A lot of other pitchers that were around in the late 60s and actually were part of the mound being lowered in 68 because the pitching was so dominant. And there were a bunch of them. And a bunch of us really pitched, you know, 200 innings a year or more when we were very young.
Yes.
And I don't think Tom did. So he may have had a little bit more at the other end.
It's interesting.
And the other end is something I really want to talk about.
Okay, because it said it's interesting, and I've got the baseball reference screen up here, and the only year they show in his minor league career was 66 when he pitched in AAA, and he did pitch 210 innings there. Went right to 251, 278, 273, 290 for his first few years in the big leagues. He was well over 200 innings all the way up until 77, 78. And even some of those other years, he hit 250 innings. So he eventually, yes, got a ton of innings on his arm. But when you saw him and you hit against him, what were your impressions of his stuff? Was it that he celebrated for being so cerebral on the mound and the thinking man's pitcher, in addition to having good stuff? But when you hit against him and saw him up close, what were your impressions of his stuff and the way he pitched?
Well, I don't even remember. Some of these things are... I know I've pitched against him a few times. I know I beat him at least once. But I think what he probably did against me, since he owned the outside corner and the knees, is just went fastball, 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 strike one, strike two, strike three, and I went back to the dugout because I couldn't hit a pitch low and away, and he could throw it every time. So that's my guess. But probably my impression of watching him from the dugout might be more accurate than from the batter's box, because when you're off to the side, you can see the velocity a little bit better than when the ball's coming toward you.
Okay.
And that's why I think I'm right in saying that he gained velocity from the beginning into the middle years of his career. But the thing that impressed me equally as much, if not more so, was that when he was starting to get to where he was losing a little bit of hop on the fastball, and so he couldn't necessarily just, you know, throw across the bottom of the strike zone and then push you back with the fastball on your hands, then he had to get a little more creative. And so most of his pitches were, like his fastball was a four-seam fastball. It was either straight or had a little riding action that I know from a standpoint of physics is impossible, but from a standpoint of anybody that's hit against anyone that throws a good four-seam fastball knows that it appears to come up and ride.
Right.
And I thought when he lost that he would go into a fairly quick decline. And the reason I felt that way was that I thought he was going to have to learn to get his fastball to sink. And he did. I don't think he could. I didn't think he could, because he was known for that drop and drive delivery he had, where when he pushed off the rubber, his right knee got dirty. It touched the mound as he drove forward, which means that his whole body was down to the point of like if you were on your knees.
Right.
And so when he was throwing so hard, that was a fairly low delivery angle. His hand wasn't that far off the ground, and so that helped him in throwing the ball by people upstairs. It almost looked like he was throwing uphill. So from that launch angle, I didn't see how he's going to be able to make a sinker sink, because at least my sense of it is that most of the guys that have good sinkers stand more upright through their delivery, and the ball leaves the hand heading down to begin with and then tails and sinks as it gets there.
Right.
And so I thought he would either have to stand straight up and you know, get his hand in a higher position, or else come up with something to augment his fastball, because he was starting to lose velocity, as we all do. And when that happened, I thought he was going to be hittable. And, you know, if you're looking at Baseball Reference, I would be curious if his strikeouts declined the last few years, strikeouts per innings pitch, because I think he went, my guess is that he would have struck out fewer batters per inning the last maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years than he was during the middle of his career.
He did. He peaked in 71 was his best strikeouts per nine. That was 9.1. And it fell all the way in 86, his last year with the White Sox. You know, a little bit of time with the Red Sox also. But it went all the way down to 3.9 from a peak of 9.1. And it did steadily go down. 8.6, 7.8, 6.8. I remember when he came to Cincinnati, and I would imagine you would too. I think it was the beginning of the 78 season. He'd come over mid-season 77, went 14-3 for the Reds, but then I think it was Terry Poole hit the first pitch of the season for a home run. Those fastballs he used to throw by people were getting hit, and he really did have to reinvent himself. A lot more breaking balls, and like you say, you had to learn that sinker. And to his credit, the guy who was pitching in the latter years for Cincinnati and then again for the White Sox and Red Sox was a completely different guy than that all, you know, the power with control guy he was before.
Yes. Yes, and I would guess that he still was able to work a four-seam fastball up and in, either for effect or to jam somebody if they started looking for everything down around the knees and sinking, curveball going down, sinker going down, changeup going down, and getting more ground balls that he had to get their eyes lifted up to consider a pitch belt high. And I would once again guess, having not seen, but I would say that he probably threw maybe 80% or more of his pitches down around the knees toward the end, and a fewer number, but enough to make an impression. Four-seam fastballs with all the velocity he had at that point right on their hands. But that was him. You know, that's why all of us, it wasn't just me. Every pitcher on every team probably got up near the front of the dugout and watched when he pitched. Because I don't know if you would say cerebral or whether you would just say command, but I think command might even be a better word, because when you have command of your pitches control-wise, the hitter never really gets a pitch he can get a good swing at.
Right.
And they get frustrated and they start swinging it. You know, they'll swing at a pitch low and away on the first pitch. If it's a fastball and they're looking for a fastball low and away, they'll swing at it and get themselves out, instead of waiting for a pitch down the middle. And I think for the really good pitchers, and especially him, maybe him more than any of them, that the hitters just never thought they'd get a pitch down the middle. They thought they're going to have to hit one of these nasty pitches on the corner. And so they were a lot different in that way. And so, I don't know, as I think about all of these various great pitchers, particularly starters from that era, every one of them brings a mental picture of how they threw and how they operated. But I was like everybody else. When Carlton pitched or Sutton pitched or Seaver pitched, I watched, because you just might learn something.
Yeah. You know, your point to the walks per nine innings, I just scanned this on Seaver, and actually there's very little variation for a guy who pitched 20 years. The lowest full season rate he had was 1.6 walks per nine innings early in his career, and the highest was only 3.6 a few years from the end. So there's not an awful lot of these are about 2.5, 2.75 walks per nine. It was really consistent throughout. So you know that he and Maddox seemed to master the idea of, I'm going to let the hitter get himself out.
Yeah, well, if he hits it, unless it goes over the fence, I'd say you at least have a 50-50 chance, no matter how hard he hits it.
Exactly. And certainly the king of drop and drive, for sure.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of Durker and Haught on Baseball. Check us out on Facebook or at haughtcorner.com.